It's time now for another episode of The Weekly Word with Professor Stephen Hines, myself, Jason Spies, and this week we are being joined by Seth Whitehead with Energy in Depth.
When it's time to put the booze down.
Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Christy Huber, president of the United Way of Cass Clay, says about Hatch coaching.
I think it's a really exciting time for our young leaders today because leaders like Eric Hatch are changing the face of what it means to lead an organization or what it means to lead a brand. He's changing that. For many years, I think that the gold standard of leadership has been somebody who is very polished and has it all together or seemingly has it all together. And throughout the years, I think that we've now, especially with technology and social media, we are drawn to what's real.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Stephen, Professor Stephen Hines, the word merchant and a radio host along with Jason Spies.
My name's Seth Whitehead, and I am team lead for Energy in Depth, which is a media outreach, education, and research program sponsored by the Independent Petroleum Association of America.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us here this week on The Weekly Word. And we like to give guests, of course, the opportunity to first talk about the organization that they're a part of, and then we'll transition it right into kind of what we're doing here today, which is your recent study. So go ahead and talk about Energy in Depth, and then after that, just go ahead and transition into kind of the thesis, if you will, of the study.
Okay. Energy in Depth is a program that was started in 2009 to correct the record for some reporting that was being done on hydraulic fracturing as high-volume hydraulic fracturing started to take off around that time. The main focus of the organization is to have media outreach to make sure that the media is reporting the facts on fracking, and also to highlight data points such as we did in this report regarding the facts on upstream oil and gas development. And our report, it's very simple, really. We simply highlight Environmental Protection Agency greenhouse gas reporting data that shows that methane emissions in virtually every major oil and gas basin have declined since 2011 at the same time that natural gas production and oil production have obviously reached all-time highs. And this is a direct refute to keep it in the ground claims that methane emissions are out of control and that the oil and gas industry is essentially responsible for the observed climb in global methane emissions and therefore is responsible for climate change. We just highlight the data. The EPA is publicly available data that you can check it out yourself. And we also just wanted to highlight the fact that the rise in global methane emissions, according to NOAA and other reputable sources, can be attributed to wetlands and agriculture and other biogenic sources, which is not the narrative that's prevalent out in the media today.
Well said. This is Professor Hines. Well said, Seth. One of the things I think continues to be our theme, I would say, Jason, is that what we're trying to do is avoid scare tactics, or as you called it, fear factor, and really talk about the issues in such a way that it's hard to refute the sources of the information, and it also provides a certain corrective to the narrative that really is out there right now. So I would rather right now, if you have a question, Jason, please ask, or otherwise we can just let Seth sort of start up and talk about this recent report.
Well,
titled Methane Emission Decline in Top Oil and Gas Basins.
Yeah, I do, actually. I'd like to just kind of chime in here and ask, I guess, a Bakken-related question. That was a big issue, the flaring, and I'm not, I guess I haven't read your report, so I'm not familiar if you did a full gamut of shale plays, specific ones, or just one in general, but I've been covering the Bakken for quite a while now, of course, and the like I said, the emissions, the flaring, the methane, that sort of thing was a problem there. They had some gas gathering infrastructure put in. They've got the numbers down substantially. And so I guess I'll start with anything in the Bakken in your report?
Yes, we have a section on the Bakken, the Williston Basin emissions, which, of course, includes the Bakken shale. And EPA data shows that emissions in the Williston Basin have declined 8.3% from 2011 to 2016. And a big reason for that is that the use of venting and flaring in what is primarily an oil play has declined significantly in recent years. And the EPA's latest greenhouse gas inventory actually specifically stated that these declines in oil plays of venting and flaring has directly contributed to a significant reduction in oil system methane emissions. And of course, the Bakken region, the issue, I think, when that shale play started taking off was an infrastructure issue, since it's a fairly new development there. I know there was significant production there before, but nothing like we've seen now. So I think that the infrastructure is starting to catch up with the initial boom, and I think that we will continue to see emissions decline in the Bakken region, which is a huge positive because the region has not only huge potential to grow in the future, but with the continued implementation of the necessary infrastructure to capture natural gas, we'll probably continue to see these natural gas production figures rise as well, because it can't really be stated enough that the industry has no interest in wasting methane, which is the major component of natural gas. So the more that can be captured, it's not only good for the company's bottom line, but for the environment as well.
Let me ask you about the pollution aspect. In terms, what we've got going on in the Bakken as well is the first refinery in the United States the last 50 years, full-on refinery. It's called the Davis Refinery. It's going to be built Belfield, North Dakota, near Theodore Roosevelt National Park. It's a national park, so you're getting national protesters, professional protesters, I call them, because that's how they make their living, is they travel the country protesting specific themes and genres of things. Now, on my program, we do a weekly Davis Refinery update, and we've talked to everybody from the state officials to the engineers to the CEO of the company to the locals, and everybody seems to be on the same page, including the state officials who have worked with the EPA, that this technology is going to be extremely clean, and it's going to, you know, have, like, I think it's called low emissions or zero sum emissions or something like that. Low source. And is there anything to do with the pollution aspect? With, I know you were talking methane here, and I might be outside the box a little on the refinery, but it just it got me thinking: pollution, national parks, oil and gas. Did you cover anything with the pollution, and did you find anything that has to deal with it with your study?
Well, our organization focuses really on upstream, so we don't. I really can't speak in too much detail about anything regarding refineries. But to answer your question pretty simply, this report just basically simply took a look at the data that the EPA is reporting. So to answer that question, we didn't get into the weeds on technological advancements and things of that nature that might be contributing to these declines. But just generally speaking, the technology has definitely improved industry-wide, especially since the shale boom has taken off. And the companies that are are always searching for innovations to reduce emissions. This is from upstream to downstream, the entire awful sense. But it's in I saw a report the other day that said, you know, that the downturn of last 2015 and early 16 provided an opportunity for companies to take a step back and you know, take a look at things that could further reduce emissions. And I think that we'll continue to see emissions decline going forward because of this the innovation that is that's coming along.
Well, and I would say one thing, Jason, that the Bakken has been, I think, and will continue to be sort of innovators, but one of the problems with the early phase of fracking, although I like Sue Mickley calls it unconventional oil drilling, and I sort of like that and better than fracking these days. But I think that this pause has allowed North Dakota, which is, relatively speaking, not a heavily populated state, but it has really begun to attract more people, more investment, more technology, and I think you can see an ongoing a list of improvements to the infrastructure and the way that things are being harvested up in the Bakken. And I think the thing that really makes the Bakken stand out right now, and I've made this point before with you, and that is that because it is a smaller state, it is less, let's put it this way, it is it cooperates more between the private and the public sector, which is very important. Without that, a lot of states are having a lot of, what should we say, scrums over all of these issues, again, because some of the protests really are not against anything other than fossil fuels in general.
How about when it comes to the Marcellus? That's another one I'm thinking of right away that comes to mind when you're talking about methane. I imagine you guys probably looked at that too, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And in the Appalachian region, which includes the Utica Shale and the Marcellus Shale, the numbers are really incredible. EPA data shows that emissions have fallen 26%, methane emissions specifically, in the Appalachian region since 2011. And that has come at a time in which natural gas production in that region has quadrupled, and I have to double check that because it's kind of shocking every time I look at that. But that's what the Department of Energy data show. And so what we're seeing in this particular region is very low methane leakage rates, which is it's really incredible. There was a recent what they call a top-down SERP study conducted by the Department of Energy, where they took direct measurements from planes and found that the leakage rate was 0.4%, which is well below the rate for natural gas to maintain its climate benefits over traditional fuels. It's really going on there. So in the Four Corners region of San Juan Basin, which is known for being the methane hotspot and kind of the focal point of a lot of activist activity, saying that methane, where they say methane is out of control, the decline is 47% since 2011. So what this data does is really just debunks some of the anecdotal stories that we're hearing and just some of the general perception that keeps being perpetuated about methane emissions. I think the reason why activists and fossil fuel success pushing that narrative tends to believe it. It sounds believable, but the data shows that with an order saying this is our opinion, we're saying that shows. So it's pretty much plain math, and that's the emphasis of a report is just to present the numbers as they are.
Well, And one thing I add on to what Seth is saying, as you and I have found out, Jason, that West Virginia is coming online right now. The indications are that there's going to be massive investments, both in their shale, but also in the pipelines that will connect Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Virginia and other states. So once Virginia really starts this their process, not only will it start adding insignificant employment, but it will also take out even more of the methane and other emissions that are in partly because of a sort of older infrastructure that now is really being replaced, but in West Virginia is going to be totally new technology.
I'm kind of looking at some things here, and I was wondering, Seth, what do you what's the biggest takeaway that you found from the study? I mean, as far as what you guys took to be kind of either the most surprising, the most obvious, or just kind of the most unique, I guess. What did you take away in kind of amazement from this?
Well, to be honest, this is kind of old news to me as I've been following this for a few years now. So basically, it kind of reinforces what the data that I've been seeing for the last 4 years. And that data has shown that methane emissions have declined as the shale boom has taken off, which is the complete opposite of what the Keep It In Ground movement has said. And you can go to various data sources. The Environmental Defense Fund, which is the biggest advocate of methane regulations possibly in the country, their own reports show very low methane leakage rates. So we have basically an environmental group saying that the methane leakage is low, and the EPA, and this is the EPA spending, not just the Trump administration, but the data dates back to the McCarthy administration, or the Obama administration and Gina McCarthy, and it shows a consistent trend. And also the data is based, the EPA data is based largely on these EDF studies that have shown very low methane leakage rates. And if anything, if you really want to get in the weeds, some of the studies the EPA has used to calculate their methane leakage rates have been identified as possibly overestimating methane leakage rates. The bottom line, though, is that methane leakage rates are falling, production is increasing, CO2 emissions are plummeting, and we're doing all this at the same time, which is really an unprecedented trend, because we're having great economic growth along with declining emissions, and no other country in the world is achieving this trend. And I think it's something that hopefully this report will further highlight and so to speak, mainstream these facts, which for whatever reason, many in the media just have not covered.
Well, and the other thing that's been made a big deal about is that methane is more CO2 than any of the other emissions. And one of the things that is being highlighted is that while it doesn't stay in the atmosphere as long, it is, I don't know, you can probably add to this, Seth, but 6, 7, 8 times as much CO2 per whatever the measurement is than the rest of the pollutants. That's really been kind of the reason why methane has really sort of become more prevalent and more visible, is because of its negative effects if it is not sort of dealt with and improved by technology and paying closer attention to not only what's happening at the well site, but also as far as transmission and pipelines and that whole cycle to the end use of natural gas.
Okay, we're just kind of rounding things back here. Seth, is there anything else that you want to add to this, or any Professor Ryan, anything else you want to ask as far as the report or while we have him on the line here?
I want to highlight the organization that has sprung up that Seth is a part of. A couple of things I found out as I talked with Seth. He comes from a family that is a four-generation oil and energy family. Also, that in some ways, Seth is the first one who's gone from being out in the field, boots on the ground, sort of part of the energy family, to being more a reporter and, as he put it, a desk job. Now, it could easily be argued that the desk jobs right now and the staff that the Independent Petroleum Association put together is very impressive. They cover all. I think there are 26 people, as I remember you saying, Seth, but also that they are distributed. So they are really reporting about information in all of the important sites in America. And that really remains key. Well, you and I, right now, Jason, we're trying to provide a more national perspective. And one of the things that I am very impressed by, the whole organization, and we'll hear from another member, a woman by the name of Nicole Jacobs, who's a very good writer, and she lives in Pennsylvania. So she'll be able to continue to provide better information about what's happening, as Seth called it, Appalachia. But we know it is Marcellus and the Utica developments. And that seems to me a very important part of our whole discussion, Jason, is that we want to represent not just the Bakken, although to me it's the most important part of this discussion, and simply because it is less political and more economic development driven.
Yeah, he said that perfectly. Yeah, we do have field teams throughout the country in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Colorado, California, and, of course, Texas. We also have a presence in Florida. And the idea is to, have boots on the ground in areas where development is occurring and where controversy is also occurring and misinformation is being pushed. We would love to have a presence in North Dakota.
I've been advocating get somebody in North Dakota because
I think one of the issues in North Dakota is that I think that public support is fairly prevalent, maybe that's a reason that we don't at the moment, but I've always been kind of fascinated with what's going on in North Dakota, and I have a fair amount of knowledge, so not saying I'd be. I think it's cold enough in Illinois. I don't know if I want to go up any further north, but definitely a place I'd like to visit and check out what's really going on up there. That rather than watch some silly sitcom, or they had a drama, a TV show made about the Bakken a few years ago that was just awful. But I've been kind of following what's going on up there from afar. So, but yeah, just to kind of summarize. Energy in depth we kind of put ourselves out there, and obviously the activists really push back on us really hard, but we just keep it based on the facts and on data such as this, and we continue to evolve, and I'm really proud to be a leader of the program, and hopefully we'll just continue to grow and help educate folks on oil and gas development and hydraulic fracturing, and because it really does, whether they realize or not, power their entire lives.
Well, and I would say another thing, and maybe I'm really talking more to Seth than to you, Jason, because you know the importance of the Bakken. But it is probably time right now, Seth, to not only sort of just provide better information in those hot spots that are sort of being demonized. But because Bakken has been such a leader in this regard, it might be time for your organization to send somebody permanently up in the Bakken, because they're like a billboard for what you're talking about right now. And you're talking really, Seth, to probably the single most connected man about information up in North Dakota in the Bakken. And he really has access to everybody, he's been doing, so I don't even know if it's true or not, Jason, but it was seemingly monthly discussions that with the governor on down, and they're also going on, you know, they're going on the record. They're not talking to you behind the scenes. And that's one of the things I like about really what's happening and what you've done, Jason, is that there's this sort of, I guess, Midwestern honesty and a unwillingness to sort of add puffery to what's happening. And I think that's really what Seth and his organization are doing. But in some ways, you guys are a marriage made in heaven, as far as I'm concerned, as far as economic development and all of these discussions in and around unconventional development of oil.
Well, I'll jump in here for just a second. And we've just got about 5 minutes left, and then we got to wrap up. But Seth, I wanted to ask you, and I'm glad you brought up kind of a little bit about your past a little bit, because I reading your bio, I saw that you had a background in journalism, and so as I do as well. And you're a sports reporter. I did some sports as well, and I actually came from a magazine background, but I worked with newspapers. I was a newspaper carrier, but. So my style was a little bit more of the soft news, whereas I can see from your background, you're a little bit more of a hard news. And so what I did was, when I got to the Bakken, I would take this hard news, this, you know, the studies and a lot of the other, you know, government type things that would direct the flow of things. And I'd turn it into soft news. So we started doing more community based stories. And the whole reason behind that was people were getting so burned out at politics, and that was politics were integrating into oil and gas so much that it almost became a party line thing, which was very odd because like you said, oil and gas actually powers like everything, really. And so to me, I did not appreciate how gun control and right to life would get it kind of integrated in with oil and gas, where because these are polarizing issues. These are very polarizing issues. And oil and gas was becoming more polarizing because the, I call it the religion of environmentalism, was taking off very well to where they positioned it as saving Mother Earth. So very long way. My approach has been to try to humanize the industry. With your background, looking more at the hard news and facts, but knowing the oil and gas industry, do you think try to humanize the industry is a decent approach for oil and gas, or do you think the hard news? Talk to me a little bit about the narrative and the presentation when it comes to reporting and writing when it comes to oil and gas.
I think it's got to be a balance, really. Obviously, what I do is almost 95% hard news. Based on the simple facts and data. However, we have had some success with the EID program this year, telling the human side of what's going on. And I'll use a particular example in Ohio. Our Ohio director, Jackie Stewart, this year highlighted how the fracking boom there is bringing out back steel manufacturing. Which was, of course, that's known as the Rust Belt now, but that hopefully will go away because of what's going on in Ohio. And she did a really great job of talking to some local folks who used to work in the steel mill, that some of their children and grandchildren are going back to work at that steel mill. And that was one of the most popular blog posts we did this year. And I think it's because it told that human element how this is making folks' life better. Because, unfortunately, the other side of this debate has done a good job of telling stories using anecdotes. And of course, I question almost all of them and think that many of them have been manufactured. But, however, they have been effective. And I agree that we, as representatives of the industry, need to do a better job of humanizing this issue and showing how it's really made people's lives better, which numerous studies and data points illustrate that. But yeah, we need to tell, you know, get people on the record saying, hey, this is, I was able to pay off my my house, or I was able to get this job and send my kids to school and make our lives better, because there's no question that it's made folks' lives better throughout the country.
You know, that is a...
Can I just add on one thing right now? There was a very famous song done by Bruce Springsteen called Youngstown, and it was a story talking about a city that's gone away. It was important in American history. And the truth is right now, Youngstown is booming for a couple of reasons. Certainly because what's underneath the ground, but also because they provide the manufacturing for a lot of the equipment that now is known as the infrastructure for unconventional oil. And that is the undertold story about places like Ohio. But I guess what I would say to both of you right now is there is no way to avoid the politics of this.
Well, that's...
And I suppose I'm going to try and be a little bit of a link for you, Jason. But also I want to be a link for the hard data kind of people who are doing the positive reporting on the fracking revolution. So in some ways, I think it's a wake-up call for us all, because we cannot avoid having some kind of a political discussion. Hopefully, and I think you and I do this, Jason, we want it nonpartisan. And we don't want to talk about the hot points because they're just so divisive.
And Seth, I want to circle back to what you were talking about before, because I thought it was very important, and I'm glad that, you know, you're a newspaper guy, because when I went and did the Bakken, I went and spent a year out there. I embedded myself into the community, because, you know, method acting, well, boots on the ground journalism, it's the same thing. That's the only way to completely understand. And that's when I saw the benefits that the industry did for the community. Okay, it did exactly what you said, the paying the student loans off and paying the mortgages off, but they also would donate to every single local baseball team, and they would make sure that they had the foundation built for the community center. If the community wanted to add the bells and whistles, that was up to them, but industry would make sure that they had a place to have weddings and have, and I started seeing this stuff firsthand, and I was so amazed by it. And back then, we'll call it 7 years ago, the news had not changed yet. And I think you know what I'm talking about. Back then, the news had gone into a hard news and soft news balance. And the weekends were more reserved for your soft news, more of your features. Hey, we're humanizing the news. We're showing that the people here are this and that. During the week, you were a little bit more of the hard business type news type of a thing, more of the facts and figures. Hey, we're busy. We're working. We got to run our kids to school. Give us time. The weekends, you had a little more time to relax. Okay. Over the last, say, 5 to 7 years, I've noticed almost instead of that hard news, soft news balance, they've replaced it with a right point of view Democrat versus left point of view Democrat. I'm just having this revelation right now, by the way, Seth. So do you have any idea? Are you following me with this logic at all, given your background in the newspaper industry?
Yeah, and I don't know. Hopefully I'm not going off the tracks here, we're on the same page, but the newspaper industry and the media is in general, but specifically the newspaper industry, is struggling to stay in business and is struggling with revenue. So I think what I see more in is the sensational clickbait type headlines, and a lot of time those are based on anecdotal evidence or hearsay, and that's really the troubling aspect of the media that I see. And frankly, they don't have, on the other end of the spectrum, they don't have the staff, the time, and the money to do investigative stories or to look into some of the claims that are being made and verify them and have reporters that specialize in a certain beat. So I think it's a combination of what you're talking about and kind of those things that I just highlighted that, frankly, make it necessary for an organization like ours to exist. Otherwise, the misinformation would basically grow beyond any sort of control. So, yeah, I hope that wasn't too rambling, but that's my take on it.
No, I think that was a good point, because what that did is that to me it layered in the quick bait headlines. A lot of time will get your reaction if they're political, and that to me kind of it mixed both of ours together into kind of what one of the problems with the media is right now. Professor Hines, it's your turn to layer something into this little snow cone we're making.
Very good line. But I think that it's almost to the point where the national media has become the National Enquirer, not the national media anymore. And I am kind of stunned because, as you know, Jason, I'm semi-retired, except I'm really over head over heels in love with this story. I'm a businessman by nature. I love entrepreneurial sort of spirits. I love that part of the American history. But I would say this, that you guys really should get together. And Seth, I'm not going to tell you where to go, but I think you should get up to the Bakken as quickly as possible, because Jason will give you the kind of tour. And without other than giving you access to both the boots on the ground and also what's being done on a governmental level. But that story really needs to be reported and enlarged, because it's really crucial, especially as natural gas now is becoming a really good, it's a good environmental story as far as emission reductions, but that seems to be lost in the news. But the best story of all is the liquid natural gas story, the LNG story, and what it's doing, how it's transforming underdeveloped countries, providing them with cleaner energy and also cheaper energy, and also is providing the light into the future where a lot of Asia and Africa are sitting on a lot of this undeveloped oil resource, and we provide the technology and the expertise for them to start doing it for themselves.
Yeah, that's a huge point. Can't remember what the exact percentage of the is, but the world is still largely not electrified. Basically, people are living without electricity and burning animal waste for cooking and heating, and that's not only terrible for their health, it shouldn't be happening. And what we're seeing, is because of shale development, we can export our natural gas, and we will be able to electrify of areas in Africa down the road. But what we're seeing already is in China is they're going to be using a lot more natural gas, which is going to drastically reduce their emissions, carbon, the criteria pollutants that lead to all the horrible air pollution that has been killing literally millions in Asia. Because of this, I predict it will be it will go away in a decade or two, and that we'll see sort of the standard of living that we've enjoyed here in the States and other less fortunate areas of the world. So it's really hard to see the downside of it.
All right, let's conclude here with some final thoughts and kind of a plug the organizations, websites, all that good stuff. So Professor Hines, we'll start with you, and then we'll transition over into Mr. Seth Whitehead. So go ahead and give some little commercials for your guys' organizations.
Okay, well, honestly, the promotion I want to give is for the thing, the Weekly Word, which you and I are doing together, Jason. It seems to me I really can't identify another source of information that represents both boots on the ground but also deals with all of those technical issues and technology. So frankly, I'm proudest of is what the work we have begun And I think as we go along, because we are attracting really smart people, articulate people who support, in a sense, our efforts to make sure that the story is told right. And we understand that one of the great benefits of what you're doing, Jason, up in North Dakota, is we're reducing the cost for our own manufacturing in the United States and emission reduction. So no more promotion than to say thank you for joining me, Jason, and helping in this effort.
All right. Well, Seth, how about you? How about let's give your organization a little bit of a plug. I'm sure you guys are looking for members and funds and all kinds of different things, and let people know. I mean, I was looking at it while we were talking on the interview, you know, and I'm on the just the facts page right now, and it looks like great stuff. You know, what is hydraulic fracturing? How does the process work in oil and gas? Great, you know, just the facts page is just one of the pages you guys have in amongst your many others with Marcellus, Ohio, Texas, et cetera, et cetera. So go ahead and give the organization a plug.
Sure. One thing I'd like to emphasize about our organization is the educational component. If you're interested in oil and gas development, and particularly shale development, hydraulic fracturing, things of that nature, we are a great source of information. Everything we do is sourced. We are fact-based and source-based. Everything that we say that is could be disputed is hyperlinked to the source. And we feel that's one of our biggest strengths. And frankly, it's why that our organization hasn't been dismissed as, sort of the industry shill type thing that a lot of naysayers will say. So, but I would encourage everybody to visit one of our free websites. Our homepage is energyindepth.org, and that is the original site that was started in 2009, and that focuses on a broad spectrum of basically every issue that we deal with at Energy In Depth. We've also launched Energy In Depth Health and Safety this year, and that address is eidhealth.org. And this site lists facts about natural gas's health benefits, as well as several studies that find that the localized pollution that has been hyped by activists is just that it's hyped, and has been really overstated, to say the least. And we've also just recently launched eidclimate.org, which focuses on emissions and climate change, and also the Exxon New campaign, and kind of getting into the details on what that is all about. And those are our three websites. And frankly, I hope that we don't add any more, because I don't know how many websites I can keep track of. It's getting a little bit out of hand, but all of them are great sites and really great sources of information.
And, of course, if you go to thecrudelife.com, and we'll have all those links there as well, if you didn't have time to write them all down. So, all right, thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us this week here on The Weekly Word.
And once again, that was Seth Whitehead with Energy In Depth, joining Professor Stephen Hines and myself, Jason Spies, with The Weekly Word. To catch other Weekly Words, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com.
Once again, I'd like to take this opportunity and thank our sponsors. And I'd like to invite you folks to go to the website, thecrudelife.com, click on our sponsors tab, and see if there's anybody there you might recognize, you might know, you might want to reach out and say hello to, or you might want to do some business with them. We certainly would appreciate that very much. They keep interviews like this for free. Not to mention, they literally keep our lights on. That's going to do it this week, folks. We'll see you next week. For Professor Stephen Hines, my name is Jason Spies, and this has been The Weekly Word.
Music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
Now we're gonna have no trouble with the treble. There's no breaks in the bass. It's just you and me and baby singing in line. Good old day. were singing it like they did in the good old days. Because we're back to the way.